Okay, so we're happy to have Clara Murgui as our speaker today. Clara is a postdoc at Caltech, and she's gonna tell us about matter unification and the TV scale with flavor anomalies and muon demands. So please feel free to start when you're ready.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation and for your attention in advance. So first of all, I will talk about the status of these flavor anomalies, which ones I think that are the most relevant ones given the data we have at hand. Also the ones I think that they are not that important or we should wait for more data to confirm them, or I think they will disappear. All my thoughts are based on data, and I'm gonna talk about a global fit I did at the end of my PhD thesis. And once we know which ones are the relevant ones, the ones that we should be paying attention if they are further confirmed, they are pointing to TV scale physics. So it's important to have in mind which kind of theory could be extending the standard model and addressing this kind of deviations in consistency with other experimental constraints. So let me start from something we are very familiar with, which is the standard model of particle physics. That's the theory we have and explains most of the phenomena we observe in nature. But we know that there are signatures, there are things pointing for the need of a beyond the standard model theory. For instance, we know that neutrinos oscillate. So for sure, we need two generations of neutrinos having non-degenerated mass. We know that there is five times more matter than the one we see electromagnetically speaking that is filling the universe, and we don't know what it is. At some point in the evolution of the universe, there was an asymmetry between matter and antimatter. We need to understand these things. So we know that the standard model cannot be the end of the story. But we can, thanks to the Wilsonian approach, we know that it's the relevant theory to address the low energy physics. And we can think of it as the lowest terms of an infinite expansion of non-renormalizable operators, which are suppressed by subsequent powers of energy over the scale where the new physics is expected to become relevant. So as in any Taylor expansion, if we want to access these high energy modes, we either increase the numerator of the parameter that we are expanding around. This means that we build super colliders, so where the center of mass energy goes up. But the thing is that we cannot choose, we can, with technology, we can improve the energy, but we cannot, this parameter here, the scale where the new physics is relevant, is chosen by nature. So if we are lucky, we might hope to test that directly, but if nature has chosen this scale to be very far from us, it's gonna be hard. Also, these things require time and require money, require agreements between different countries. Our lifetime is two orders of magnitude years, so maybe we don't see it. But there's a more hopeful avenue, which is precision physics, and that's what the experiments right now are based on. And this means basically having an experiment that can make a very accurate, very precise measurement, if we know the standard model prediction at high precision, by comparing both measurements, we can access to these corrections to the effects of the high energies. And actually that's how LHCb and the B factories work. And right now the precision of these measurements is already accessing scales between 1 and 10 dBs. And we are starting seeing things. So some of you may think they will disappear, and it's always a safe bet to bet for the standard model. Actually, if you bet for the standard model a bottle of wine and you lose, you have won that you have new physics. So it's always kind of a safe bet. And sometimes most of the anomalies that we have observed or claimed, some of them have disappeared. But for me, it's not that surprising to see some deviations at this scale. Just from induction from the standard model, we know that the scale for QCD and the scale of the electroweak, there are 2-3 orders of magnitude difference. So we kind of expect also the new physics to end up for applying the Wilsonian approach to applying EFTs. But there's nothing, or could be perfectly fine if there's some new physics that is already acting at the window 1/10 dB, and it's affecting these measurements that are observables, these flavor observables, which we have experiments that can see it very precisely. So these deviations are pointing to deviations in B2C and B2S transitions, and then they point to lepton flavor universality violation. So what is this lepton flavor universality? In the standard model, we have the leptons are organized in 3 different families. So, but the only thing that can, so if we look at the different leptons, which are the charged leptons, electron, muon, tau, and the neutrinos, through the different mediators of the forces of the standard model, if we look at them through the photon, we'll see the same for the electron and muon and tau because they carry the same electromagnetic charge. For the gluons, we couldn't see anything, and same for the W and the C boson. We cannot distinguish between the different families. The only boson that can distinguish between the different families is the Higgs, which has spin zero, and it's because they have different mass. That's the only difference between different families. So in that sense, if we see some lepton flavor universality in the physical observables, we expect that this comes from the difference between the masses in the different leptons. But these things that have been observed, these anomalies, need some other source of lepton flavor universality violation, which is not only the mass. So might be pointing to new physics that talks differently to taus, to muons, and to electrons. So let me start talking about the B2C transitions. Those are the ones I think that they will disappear or it will be modified soon. This is a hot topic, so that we will be getting data. Hopefully next fall, we have another measurement for lambda B to lambda C. Then we will have Bell 2 releasing again measurements for RD and RD star, so we will know. And I'm going to tell you why, with the data we have at hand, I think there's something inconsistent here and probably we will disappear. So this is based on a global fit I did in collaboration with Martin Jung, Rosa Mandal, Ana Peñuelas, and Tony Peak at the end of my PhD thesis. So that's the status right now of these anomalies on RD and RD star. You can see that they have been fluctuating over time. The deviation, the average deviation, also the excitement in the number of papers about this on archive. So you can see that two things or three things that we should keep in mind looking at this plot is that the latest measurements, 2019, Bell released the latest measurement on RD and RD star in spring, Morion 2019. And you can see that it's pretty close to the standard model, this measurement alone. Same thing for LHCb 2018. It's compatible with the standard model prediction. So these two last measurements they changed the way they tag they reconstruct the semi-leptonic decay. They were looking at the hadronic decays of the tau lepton, and it seems that in this way they get more agreement with the standard model. So still the average, the whole average is 3.1, but this the average of two channels. And all the different measurements done by different experiments, including Babar 2012, which unfortunately cannot be reconstructed because Babar is sweet stuff. So that's something we should keep in mind. The other thing is that with time, we see that the average goes closer and closer to the standard model prediction.
So I can ask if it is a one sigma or two sigma contour?
This is one sigma, each of them. Okay. So now the deviation, taking into account all the averages, which is this red ellipse here, is 3.1 sigma.
Okay.
So taking into account the two different channels, RD and RD star, and all the experimental measurements, also including Babar, for instance.
Thank you.
So these ratios are the ratio between the branching of the B meson going to D or D star tau mu. So here we have the third generation lepton. And in the denominator, we have the light modes, so the electron and the muon. And these are clean observables in the sense that we can think that there are LCT amplitude methods that allow you to factorize the hadronic current and the leptonic current. It's not as naively it looks in this picture that you can cancel both. They are connected by some LCTs, but you can think that the hadronic current is basically the same in the numerator and the denominator. So when we parameterize the unknown, the non-perturbative physics with the four factors, you expect that the main uncertainty is canceled because of the ratio shape. Also, the four factors are kind of known because the B and the C quarks are heavy, so you can do heavy quark expansions and interpolate over the whole transfer momenta Q square that you transfer to the lepton current. And also the leptonic current, that is what changes, is kind of is cleaner because we understand leptons better at these scales. Also, the BCB matrix element, which is a bit controversial because depends how you measure it. If you use inclusive or exclusive measurements, it gives a slightly different result. It cancels out in this ratio shape. So that's nice. Also, experimentally, you expect that the same kind of errors, systematic errors, cancels because of this shape. They are clean and nice observables. And what was shocking us was that if this 3.1 sigma deviation really comes from new physics, it has to compete with a three-level contribution of a standard model, which is the WH boson. So the WH boson is is realizing this process, and it's a three level. So this means that new physics is either really light around the TV scale, like one, two TVs, or is strongly coupled to the standard model. And we haven't seen any other signature at the LHC. So that's something that is kind of intention. And the same kind of deviation have been observed in other observables involving the same kind of B2C transition. For instance, RGPSI or these angular observables, the Tauli star polarization and the longitudinal star polarization, which basically arise because the B meson goes to the D star. D star decays into a D and a pi, so opens a new plane, and there are more angles you can access experimentally, so you can build more independent observables, and you can also aim to measure them. So this RGPSI, the central value measured at the experiment, cannot be addressed by any kind of new physics. It's too high compared to the standard model prediction. But I'm not going to focus. That's something weird. We need to wait for more data, or we need to improve the knowledge we know about these four factors. These four factors, BS to GPSI, are not as well known as the B2D or B2D star. The level of precision is different. That's why the standard model prediction has these large uncertainties. So I won't be aiming to address this observable. It's weird, let's say like that. Like new physics cannot address it right now. But this Tauli star and the longitudinal star polarization, which this one was also released by Bell in 2019, and known as the BH2 sigma from the standard model, they have the same four factors and they have been measured, so we can try to understand what is going on, taking into account these experimental measurements. So what we did was take the most effective Hamiltonian possible at the big work mass, respecting QED and QCD. And you can see that any kind of new physics can be encoded in these low energy constants that are the Wilson coefficients. So for instance, if you have an extra W boson or a Higgs scalar or a vector or a scalar leptoquarks, which are mediators that interact simultaneously between quarks and leptons, once you integrate them out, they will contribute to one or several Wilson coefficients. So if you put all the Wilson coefficients to zero, you recover the standard model, which is this one. And that's why this effective Hamiltonian is normalized by the Fermi constant. So this contains two powers of the WH boson in the denominator. So we did some assumptions. First, that there's a gap between this effective Hamiltonian and the new physics scale that allows us to implement the effective field theory approach. We also assume that the new physics only talks to the third generation of leptons, only to the taus. And that was based on a global feed that one of our collaborators, Martin Jung and David Stroh, did with the light modes, where they didn't see any deviation with respect to a standard model prediction. So if there's new physics behind, it's going to be very constrained. That's why we only consider 5 Wilson coefficients instead of 15. So we are only considering the Wilson coefficients of the tau currents for the leptons. We assume that the standard model effective field theory is the right theory. This means that the Higgs is part of an SU2 doublet, and the electroweak symmetry is linearly realized. So once you do the matching between this effective Hamiltonian and the SMEFT, you will see that there's no way you can generate a non-flavor universal CVR. So if we have assumed that there's no new physics in the electrons and the muons, in this case, the Wilson coefficient is also zero. So this leaves us with 1 degree of freedom less to analyze. And finally, we assumed that the Wilson coefficients were real. We promoted them to be complex, and we didn't see an improvement in the fit. So this was in order to not have a degenerate continuous of minima, we assumed that they were real for the study. And these are the inputs we used, the ratios, the longitudinal star polarization. We didn't include the Tauli star polarization because the uncertainties are large and it's consistent with the standard model, so it was not needed. But this guy here, the BS to tau nu, if there's new physics inducing the leptonic decay B2D or B2D star tau nu, the same new physics, because of the Feynman diagram is just changing the geometry, is going to affect the leptonic decay BS to tau nu. And this, we don't have any experimental bound for this leptonic decay because the BS is too heavy for the B factories to produce it. And LHCb doesn't do well reconstructing invisible channels. So in this case, the way we can put a bound is doing an indirect bound, for instance, from the total lifetime of the BC meson. A bound of 30-40% can be obtained. And some people even claim that this bound can be stronger and can be 10% if you analyze data, LEP data at the C peak, where the C is on shell and decays to B quarks. But then you have to assume that the big words hadronize in the same way as they do in LHC, and there are some uncertainties in there. Yeah, Asmina.
Oh, sorry. I need to unmute myself. Hi. Sorry. I have a question regarding CP violation. Would this be constrained by EDM? Because those laptop quarks are tree level and...
Yeah, so it would be constrained by EDMs if the Wilson coefficients were complex. So we assume that they were real. I agree totally with you. If they are generically, they are complex, they will suffer constraints from EDMs.
How severe are they?
Huh?
How severe are they? Because in general, you expect them to be complex, right? I mean,
yeah. They will. There are some papers that they needed them to be complex. The thing is that for the anomalies, they don't have to be complex. So you can
For the anomalies, it doesn't have matter. But if you assume the general case that they are complex, I'm asking could they fit the anomalies again?
Complex.
Let's say that they are complex because you are bound to have some phases, right? I mean, theory, there is no reason that the CP violation is preserved.
Exactly. But the imaginary part is going to be constrained by the EDMs. But the real
part
could still address the anomalies.
No, forget about it. So let's assume the phases are order one. So the imaginary part and the real part are of the same order.
Okay.
So the question is, how much are they constrained from EDMs? Like, can you fit the anomaly, given that we haven't seen EDMs? If I assume the most general case that I can.
I think I would have to check it carefully, okay. But I know what I remember from these studies where they needed the imaginary part because they were only assuming some UV completion where there was only one Wilson coefficient, for instance. They needed some part of the imaginary, some imaginary part to address the anomalies as well. And this was strongly constrained by the EDMs. So there's no like completely freedom with this imaginary part.
Yeah. Okay.
But in general, if the constraints were super severe, if I allow these Wilson coefficients to be general, the real part is not touched by the EDM. So it could be, right now I'm assuming that they are real. So if they can address the anomalies now, they will also be able to address the anomalies if there's a phase that is constrained. So let's say the imaginary part of this Wilson coefficient is gonna be constrained. How much I don't know exactly, but I know that the constraints are severe. Yeah, can maybe give you some papers where they study this complex Wilson coefficient.
Yeah, we can come back to this in the end. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so this indirect constraint can be obtained from other measurements like the total lifetime or the LEP data. And in this case, this will constrain this axial combination of Wilson coefficients and the pseudo-scalar combination. So this is something we are going to take into account. We're going to take the 30% bound and also the 10% to compare. So before doing any fit, if we just ask ourselves how the observables depend on the different Wilson coefficients one at a time, you can see two things that are important and are already telling us something is that both anomalies are RD star can be very easily and cleanly explained with one of the Wilson coefficients, CVL. Just a small shift of this Wilson coefficient addresses perfectly the deviation observed for the experiment. Like this Wilson coefficient is nothing else but a shift of the contribution of the WH boson. So this is telling us that if there's something we are underestimating or overestimating in the standard model, some relative correction, something that goes in the direction of the W, is just translating into a shift of this CVL, because this goes like CVL plus one. That's the contribution of the vector operator, left-handed vector operator that comes after integrating the W boson. So maybe there's something we are not taking into account and would perfectly explain these experimental mesh deviations. Also from the part of the experiment, if the central value shifted a bit, could easily and nicely go to the standard model without the need of some exotic new physics addressing these deviations. The second thing we can notice is that this longitudinal distal polarization that was measured by Bell by first time in last spring 2018, you can see that any of the Wilson coefficients alone can address this experimental measurement. The only ones that could at the one sigma level are these scalar and pseudo-scalar Wilson coefficients, but they are constrained by this BS to tau nu leptonic decay. So this faded line is above the 30-40% bound I was telling you before, and the dashed line is above the 10%. So then if you go to the more conservative 30-40% bound, you cannot touch the one sigma region of this experimental measurement. But you know, there might be, as I told you before, once you integrate out the new mediator from your UV, there might be different Wilson coefficients that they can interfere and can constructively give you some enhancement or something. So we need to do a global fit taking all of them into account. So we did that, and the global fit gave us that the best fit solution is compatible with the standard model. Each of the Wilson coefficients is at one sigma level is compatible with the standard model. And then you might ask, then why the chi-square is improving so much with respect to the standard model solution? The reason is that the Wilson coefficients are strongly correlated. So you cannot have all of them simultaneously to zero. So if you set one of them to zero, probably the other one will have to go to the extremes of these error bars. But on average, the fit is telling you, look, there's some tension between experiment and theory. But we cannot. The fit doesn't tell you which is the preferred direction of new physics because there's no preference direction of new physics. So we thought maybe one of our assumptions is wrong and we were too strict making our assumptions. So we started relaxing them. For instance, we considered right-handed neutrinos, which would increase the number of Wilson coefficients to 10 because we also have the right currents. And we didn't see any relevant improvement. We saw locally some improvement, but not compared to the number of Wilson coefficients we were doubling. So also we allowed this CVR to be non-universal, and we obtained the same solutions we had in the other fit, plus some solution that where the new physics was canceling exactly the standard model contribution, which was highly fine-tuned. So this has to be taken as a grain of salt because the fit sometimes plays these tricks that some of the new physics is used to cancel the one coming from the standard model. And also we allow the Wilson coefficients to be complex and we didn't see an improvement of this tension. So maybe there's this assumption, the new physics only enters in the third generation, we didn't relax. And actually there was a paper 2 months ago by Christoph, Denny Van Dyck, Marcia Borton and Martin Jung that they redid this global fit with the light modes using the latest correlation matrices provided by Bell. And they found that there was something fishy in one of the correlation matrices. They found that there was something that some matrix that was non-singular. So they asked the collaboration to confirm what is going on with this matrix. But using this matrix, they found a 4 sigma deviation in the forward-backward asymmetry in one of the observables of the B to D star and mu and E mu. So there's now with these correlation matrices that they know that there's something wrong. There's some hint of new physics only also in the light modes. And that's why they asked the collaboration to answer. As far as I know, Bell hasn't answered yet, but probably these are things that are coming and the field is very dynamic. So we will see, we will know soon what's going on. If they correct the matrix and they redo the fit and they find that everything is fine, then forget about the light modes. But maybe that's the reason why in our fit we are seeing this tension between the theory and experiment. Or maybe there is something at experiment that will. My guess is that this longitudinal star polarization that cannot be addressed by any kind of new physics, the central value in the next measurement by Bell 2 that is planning to measure it will go to the central value will shift to the standard model. So we have to wait and we'll see what happens. But what the message is that with time, these anomalies, these deviations are disappearing. However, for the B2S transitions, something very different happens. So the status right now, that was in 2017, and there were some deviations. Now it's a deficit with respect to the measured, the expected value for the B going to K or B going to K star. Now we changed to the neutral anomaly. So now it's based on B2S transitions. And that's why we have muons or possibility. We cannot have tau because of the. So there are some deviations were observed in these B2K semi-leptonic decays, in P5 prime, which is an angular observable made in order to optimize the hadronic uncertainties, and RK and RK star, which are the siblings of RD and RD star, but now with these B2S transitions. But the excitement was already there, but a couple of months ago, LHCb released the last measurement on RD alone, and this measurement is 3.1 sigma. So this 3.1 sigma is very different from the 3.1 sigma I was talking about in the charts anomalies, because this is only one measurement and one experiment. This alone goes above 3 sigma level. And it's also going in the direction of other experiments. So this is this observable is very clean. Actually, all these ones that I shaded in gray, I'm not even going to try to address them, because this enhancement or deficit that could be induced by a new physics, for instance, a leptocore mediator, can also be induced at the level of the standard model because of these four quark effective operators, these dimension six operators. They could be modifying the decay. This is the so-called long distance effect. We at the perturbative, at the non-perturbative level, their effect is not very well understood. So they could be shifting this semi-leptonic decay, for instance, and be mimicking exactly the contribution of a new physics mediator. However, for the ratios, for RD, the thing we know is that since this comes from the standard model, in the absence of new physics, we know that the way this connects to the neutral current of leptons is through a vector interaction. So we know that it contributes to the operator O9, that is the vector operator, dimension six. And this the shift is going to be the same for the muons, for the electrons, and for the taus, because in the standard model, all the gauge bosons are lepton universal, as I was telling you before at the beginning of the talk. So that's why for RK, if we assume that there's no new physics, it's true that these long distance effects might be modified in the numerator and the denominator, but it will be modified in the same way. So in the absence of new physics, we expect to get one. This means that any deviation from one is pointing to new physics, cannot be done by these long distance effects that are not very well under control. So I'm gonna be focusing on the clean observables. They are called clean observables because of that, which are RK star. And also this BS to mu mu leptonic decay. So particularly in this case, this leptonic decay, which is the same as I told you before, be going to B2D star, also had some contribution to the BC to tau nu. In this case, the same Wilson coefficient would induce also a BS to mu mu or BS to EE. So in this case, these are also clean observables. And the reason is that if you compute the transition amplitudes between the B meson and in this case, the vacuum, because we don't have hadrons in the final state, because of parity, the vector operator cannot play any role in here. It's only dependent on the axial and the pseudoscalar operators. That's why the long distance effects cannot modify this observable, and it's classified also as a clean observable. So that's the three kind of observables I'm gonna take into account. Unfortunately, BS2EE has not been measured yet. It's far from the standard model prediction, the experimental precision. And another nice thing of these anomalies is that they compete with a loop level contribution of the standard model. And this allows them to be heavier, something between 1 and 10 TBs. It's not that they have to be really in the threshold of 1 TB. So there's less tension between the direct constraints, and you could have some leptoquark or you could have some vector boson addressing them. So indeed, that this also some message we should learn from these anomalies is that they are more confirmed with time. We'll see next year what happens, but if they are further confirmed and this 3 sigma goes to 4 sigma or 5 sigma, then we as a theorist, we should think about which kind of UV completion or which extension of a standard model could be addressing these deviations, right? And now it's time to think not only about EFTs, but what kind of theory can be behind these anomalies. And I'm gonna talk about this matter unification theory because it's motivated by several reasons, as I'm gonna tell you, to have this completion of the TV scale new physics, addressing TV scale new physics. So basically in the standard model, we have quarks and leptons and they are different because some of them, we can see them through the gluons, some of them carry color, the other ones don't. So there have been attempts in the literature trying to unify them. For instance, ground unified theories, right? SU5 is my favorite example. You know that in SU5, quarks and leptons live together in the same reps, particularly 5 bar and 10, and they break explicitly baryon number. So unfortunately, the broken generators of SU5, the ones that define the gut scale, they talk simultaneously between quarks and leptons. They are vector leptoquarks, and they also have diquark interactions. So you cannot assign a concrete baryon number to them such that baryon number is broken. And that's why particularly it mediates the decay of the proton. You know that the proton is one of the most stable particles we have. The lifetime is 10 to 34 years. So this means that the mass of these broken generator has to be, unfortunately, above 10 to the 15 GBs, which predicts a huge desert between us and the new physics. So if you want these theories to address the anomalies, you might pay another doublet triplet splitting problem or some tuning potential for having some fields which have light masses and compared to the scale where the theory is realized. So I'm not going to be that ambitious. Let's try to just unify matter, quarks and leptons. And that was the idea of Patti Salam. Why don't we look at the leptons as the fourth color of the quarks, carrying transparent color? So they would be just exactly the fourth quark, the fourth color of quarks, but being transparent, so being broken at some point. And in this case, I'm going to talk about this theory, which is SU4 times SU2U1, is based on this Patti Salam idea, but is the minimal one in the sense of number of generators required, and only extends the standard model fields, doesn't require any other fermion content above the standard model. It's anomaly free and nicely unifies quarks and leptons. So in this theory, the SU2, the left-handed fermions live together in one representation. You can see here we have always the three columns, red, green, blue, and the transparent color, the leptons, neutrino and electron left-handed. They don't have right-handed charge because they are just SU2 doublets. And the ones that are SU2 singlets will live in two representations where we have the ups, the three colors of ups and the neutrinos, and the three colors of downs and the charged leptons. The reason why I didn't call FU nu is because we didn't want people to get confused with the strength tensor for electromagnetism, which is mu nu. But this is not that the ups play a more important role. It's they are together with the neutrinos and same for the downs. So we need the scalars to break this theory down to the standard model. And we can do that with a scalar in the fundamental of SU4, because we need to lower the rank in one unit. And this is done by the fundamental. Particularly, I like this theory because it's only connected to the standard model through one-step breaking. It's not that you need more scalars or more breaking patterns. It's one of the completions of the standard model, one of the few completions, connected only by one-step breaking that embeds, has only standard model fields, and better it's anomaly free, of course, and all these things. So this scalar representation, you can choose one, the fourth component to be neutral. You can charge it under U1R such that the fourth component is hypercharged neutral. And once this guy gets above, we'll break SU4 down to SU3, and a linear combination of this U1 and the U1R will be broken and will give you a C prime. The other one, the remaining unbroken one, is going to be the hypercharge. So the vector bosons of SU4 are 4 squared minus 1, 15. You can recognize the 8 gluons. And the broken generators here are the ones defining the scale of the matter unification, of quark-lepton unification. So particularly, it will be given by the gauge coupling times the BEF of this scalar breaking SU4. And the gauge coupling is something that we know, because at the level of where SU4 is broken, it has to match the strong coupling. So if you run the strong coupling up to the matter unification scale, you will figure out what is the gauge coupling G4. So the nice thing of this vector leptoquark here is that unlike the ones of SU5, you can assign to it, because of these quantum numbers, you can assign to it a baryon number such that it's preserved at the renormalizable level. So these interactions do not violate at the renormalizable level the baryon number if you assign a concrete baryon number to this guy, because it doesn't have like quark couplings. It's only vector, only leptoquark. So in that case, it could be, or we can hope to realize this theory at the lowest scale. But unfortunately, these other couplings will mediate other kind of flavor interactions, for instance, K-long decaying to mu e, which has not been seen, and the constraints are pretty strong, 10 to the minus 12. This, unfortunately, is making this guy living above the 1,000 TeV scale, which is not the GATT scale, but still is predicting kind of small desert between us and the new physics. So this is not exactly true, because that's a naive bound. But in reality, once you go to the physical basis, these quarks and leptons are in the flavor eigenstate basis. So if you go to the mass eigenstate basis, you have to rotate them. And maybe these interactions here, the gauge interaction, suffers from some mixing suppression. So in principle, you could aim to lower this bound on the mass for the vector leptoquark a bit, like one order of magnitude or two if you want. But still, it's hard to address the different anomalies with this vector leptoquark. And the reason is that these Yukawas, right, are just a gauge coupling times two unitary matrices. And the product of two unitary matrices is a unitary matrix, so it's kind of constrained. So if you cannot choose the arbitrary texture you want in order to satisfy the experimental constraints in other flavor experiments and have some enhancement for B2C or B2S, depends on which kind of new physics you want to address. So it's hard, it's very challenging. That's why people that try to address the anomalies with a vector lepto quark 3 1/2, they have to go to SU4, SU3, SU2, U1, this kind of Patti Salam extensions. That's the work of Gino Isidori and collaborators, because they want extra fermions such that these matrices are not unitary and they can achieve the texture they want to address the anomalies. But in this theory, we don't have to really rely on this vector lepto quark to address the anomalies. We have more candidates. We haven't explained yet how we give mass to the fermions. So if we break the standard model to QED QCD, we can do that with a Higgs boson. Unfortunately, we predict the same mass for the ups and for the neutrinos and for the down quarks and the charged leptons. We do know that it's not true, so we need to modify that. This can be corrected by adding a scalar in the 15 in the adjoint representation of SU4, doublet under SU2, that contains a second Higgs doublet. And since it's proportional to the non-singular generator of SU4 that distinguishes between the quarks and the leptons, you can generate the desired splitting between the ups and the neutrinos and the downs and the charged leptons. So for the downs and the charged leptons, it's fine. You know that the strange mass and the muon mass are more or less the same. Tau and the boton, you need some more precise correction. So you know that some entries of this Yukawa 4 won't be zero. But then for the splitting in the ups and the neutrinos, to generate the desired splitting between the top mass and the heaviest neutrino, which is 0.1 electron volts, you have to pay a painful fine-tuning if you really wanna do it with this cancellation of Yukawas. So unless there's some symmetry, it's very ugly to expect this three-level fine-tuning, right? So there are ways to these people. Sometimes they break the SU4 instead with the fundamental. They break it with the symmetric representation, which is the 10. And the 10 can couple with two FUs. So once it gets a BEF and breaks the SU4, it also gives a mass for the right-hand neutrinos. However, you can do the type 1 CISO mechanism. But because the support of the mechanism is fixed, it's at the electroweak scale, unfortunately, you cannot have a low-scale CISO. So you need the gut scale in order to reproduce the 0.1 electron volt. And unfortunately, the theory is realized at the very high scale. Yeah, Asmina. Yeah,
I have one more. So here you're talking about flavor violation in the quark sector, but there's also flavor violation in the lepton sector.
Yeah.
So how does that constrain the theory? And again, I'm going to ask about the p-violation because you're adding all these Yukawas and now there's no reason why these are real.
Yeah. So there will be constraints. I'm going to talk about
You're going to come back to them. Okay, great.
Yeah, because I didn't explain yet how I'm going to address the anomalies. So
yeah, okay, great. Thanks.
Right now I'm just saying the features of the theory. So we have, we have extra Yukawas that they might be complex, they might be real. And then we have, in general, they will be complex. And we have these new scalars, right?
Yeah.
So indeed, so now just to explain you why the theory can be realized at the TV scale. That was the mechanism proposed by Pavel and Mark. If you give mass to the neutrinos through the inverse CISO mechanism, basically, mm-hmm. It's just adding a fermion singlet. Then you can have a mass term, a Dirac mass term for the right-handed neutrino living here, and the new neutral fermion, and a major and a mass term for the new neutral fermion that comes because of the gauge symmetries. So once this chi gets above and breaks SU4, this was in the fundamental, gives a Dirac mass term for this combination. Mm-hmm. And then the neutral mass matrices, you have the Dirac masses between the left and the right-handed neutrinos. Then you have the Dirac masses between the right-handed neutrinos and the new neutral fermion and the major and a mass. So if this hierarchy is satisfied, then you can expect some suppression for the active neutrinos. And this hierarchy is kind of natural in the sense that these Dirac masses are proportional to the BEF of the electroweak, while these Dirac masses are proportional to the BEF that breaks SU4. So you kind of expect that this hierarchy has to happen like that if the Yukawas are more or less the same order. And then this could suppress this neutrino mass, But if the mu was, that is a dimension full parameter, was order one or heavier, then you would still need the leptoquark scale to be very far from the TV scale. But this could be small, and it's technically natural because this guy is protected by a Fermion symmetry. So it's technically natural for this mu to be small. We don't know where it comes from. Maybe in the unification of this theory in embedding in SU6 or in SO10, this comes from some radiative correction or something that explains why this mu is so small. But we need this mu to be small if we want to realize the scale, the theory at the TV scale. So in principle, you could do it without a BEF too large. So it's only bounded by this scale long decay to mu e. And in principle, it could be 100 TVs, even 10 TVs, if you want to rely on this mixing suppression. So it's kind of natural also to expect that the new scalars, because now we know that the vector boson is hard for addressing these anomalies, but together with the second Higgs doublet that we need to correct the fermion masses, there are some leptoquarks predicted, particularly these 5.3 and 5.4. These guys will interact in the standard model, quantum numbers are charged in this way, and they will interact with quarks and leptons right through this.
It's a bit of so you have a lot of scalars. There's the from the 15 here. There's chi
and the Higgs.
And the chi. Higgs. So the question is there a vacuum alignment problem? There are several questions. You have, first of all, you have like I don't even know how many hierarchy problems to solve.
No, it's not a hierarchy problem if the scale of the theory is TV or 10 TVs.
Why? Right?
You wouldn't.
So you're imagining that there is a UV completion at the 100 TeV, things get strong. So.
Okay. So you mean, yeah, we have the same kind of hierarchy problem that we have in the standard model. Yeah.
No, it's more, right? Because you have
more scalars.
You have more scalars, but also there's the question is there a question of vacuum alignment? Meaning that if I write the most general potential account for the scalars, how often does it break it the right way?
So you have freedom in your Yukawas to break them in different steps. They don't trigger, one doesn't trigger the vacuum of the other one. Or what do you mean by vacuum?
If I write the most general potential I can for these fields, is there a situation where I actually break color instead of what I want?
No.
Ah, okay.
No, it's fine. It doesn't break charts and doesn't break color. That's why, it's chosen for that. You break, it's kind of SU5 that you break this with the adjoint. In this case, we break with the fundamental, but the U1i is preserved. And color is one of the groups that it's unbroken. So the Higgs then breaks this to QCD. So yeah, we have more hierarchy problems in the sense of the hierarchy problem in the standard model. But since we don't understand what happens in the standard model, once we understand why we have this hierarchy problem and it's solved, maybe solving also the other problems of the other scalar. So it's true that we are enlarging the number of scalars that are far from the Planck scale, but we don't know also if there are more UV completions or if there's like an onion with different layers up to the Planck scale. We don't, or if they're SUSY eventually or some other symmetry, or they come from some composite model, no, that we are generating the scalars. We don't know, but it's going to be the same problem as the Higgs multiplied by 3 because we have more scalar representations. So the thing is that these scalar leptoquarks that are predicted together with the second Higgs doublet, they are the only two scalar leptoquarks in the standard model that can interact with the matter of the standard model that do not violate baryon number at the renormalizable level. All the other ones allow for a diquark coupling. These ones, if you play with all the fermions, are the only ones that don't. So they don't break baryon number, not at the scalar potential, not at the Yukawa interaction. So if you assign them a baryon and lepton number, you will see that it's preserved by all the different interactions. So that's nice, but it's not, because otherwise we would have to assume some C2 symmetry or some symmetry by hand for protecting the decay of the proton or the neutron. But it's not just that. Imagine that this theory is broken at the, it's realized at the 10 TV scale or so. We hope that it's somehow completed in a more unified group because we haven't unified forces, or maybe unifies eventually in SU6 or in SO10. So it will have some corrections coming from this UV completion, right, in the EFT. So in the standard model, if we take, as many people do, this scalar leptoquartz as a simplified model to understand the anomalies, because they don't mediate baryon number violation at tree level. Okay. But at dimension five, you can write these kind of interactions. And once the Higgs gets above, we'll define a biquark coupling. So there's no way you can assign simultaneously a baryon number to this leptoquark interaction and the diquark interaction, and this would lead to baryon number violation. Baryon number violation, of course, that will be suppressed by the cutoff scale. But even if the cutoff scale is Planck, you would need the mass of this scalar leptoquarks to be 10 to the 8 GeVs. So forget about trying to address this TV scale physics with them, if that's the case. But in Patti-Salam, because of the larger structure, symmetry structure of the group, if you go to the EFT of Patti-Salam, and you want to try to find which is the lowest dimension operator that violates baryon number, you will find that it's dimension 7. So this means that even if once the KAIS gets above, it's enhanced by 2 powers of the scale of matter unification, it's suppressed by 3 powers of the cutoff scale, because this cutoff scale has to be above 10 to the 15 GeVs in order for fermion operators to not violate baryon number in an acceptable way, then you are perfectly fine having TV scale scalars 5.3 and 5.4. They are protected by the larger symmetry by this Patti-Salam symmetry. So basically, Patti-Salam is giving you 5.3, 5.4, and the vector leptoquark some protection such that they don't lead to an acceptable baryon number violation, not even at the non-renormalizable level. So they are fine if they are light. And that's something that is very nice. So I will be focusing on this Yukawa force, because the Yukawa 2, as I told you before, because the neutrinos get mass in a different way and you can correct the masses through the inverse ISO, this Yukawa could be whatever, could be small, and still you would address the masses in a proper way. But the Yukawa 4 has to be, some entries have to be different from zero if you want to correct the fermion, the down quark masses and the charged leptons. So I'll be focusing on these 2 interactions here. And that's the work I did together with Pavel and Alexis. And now we are going to try to address the anomalies. So if you look at this Phi-3, which is the first scalar leptoquark I'm going to be talking about, it has 2 components, 2 SU2 components, Phi-3 1/3 and Phi-3 minus 2/3. So if you integrate out this Phi-3 minus 2/3, it will lead to this dimension 6 effective operator, which is suppressed by 2 powers of the Phi-3 mass scale. And this leads to a contribution of the B2K mu mu or B2K EE. So the Wilson coefficients are predicted to be the same in this case for the 2 operators that are generated after integrating out this scalar leptoquark. They are predicted to be the same up to a sign, so we can parameterize everything with one of the Wilson coefficients. So 1 for the muons and 1 for the electrons. And we can write all the observables as a function of these 2 Wilson coefficients. So if we do that, you can see, and now, Asmina, I know you will ask me, we are real, but if we had to, by some reason, we were expecting in general, I agree with you, that can be complex, to be the same order, we might have trouble with EDM. So that's something we are looking at now, and we still haven't finished the study, so I cannot tell you right now, but there will be constraints. So right now, just thinking about the real part, that is the one we need for the anomalies, I'm going to show you that this theory can do it. But if we, by some reason, expect that has to be the same for the complex part, and I agree with you that there's no reason for these Yukawas to not have a complex part, then you will have contributions to EDMs. And yeah, so maybe this makes the theory less attractive because you have to assume that the imaginary part is suppressed by some reason, right? But this is totally.
Look, I'll tell you, I mean, it's a general, and I know I appear very negative, but we've been ignoring like CP violation and flavor violation for the standard model for a while, and everyone was hoping we turn on the LHC and like all the particles will come out. It's just that it's a very, I mean, CP is not a good symmetry in the standard model. Like the CKM mixing angle is, CP violating angle is order 1. It's not small. That's the only thing. And to me, it's like, it's not that I don't want these anomalies to be real. It's just that.
I mean, but they could be,
I don't know what symmetry, because the moment you have, and Patti Salang has a lot of couplings. It's not like if you were just unifying everything in SU5. So there's one matrix. So let's say, because everything is coming from this CP violation that you cover, I would tell you, great, fantastic, you have the minimal model, but here there is tons of UCAVAs.
Well, they're the same as a realistic SU5, because in SU5 you have two UCAVAs, but you don't have, you say you have the same problem as here. You predict the same masses for the downs and the charged leptons. The ups are fine because you don't have right-handed neutrinos, but then you need a 45 if you want to correct the masses.
No, but that's in the gut scale. Here, this everything is happening at 10 TeV. So if I have a violating phase at 10 to the 16 GeV, I don't have to worry about it. But all the structure is no longer at the high scale. Everything is happening at the very low scale.
Yeah, so you would need a mechanism at the UV completion that it justifies why the UCAVAs are
really. Yeah, or a symmetry, but it's not, there is no such
It's
symmetry.
Not here.
Yeah. It's not here. But, I mean, from a low energy perspective, it would be great to have a way to show that, well, there's a way to make all these coefficients real and make CP violations small, but it's a huge data point. So I think it's unfair to ignore it. Just it's also for historic reasons. We made the mistake of ignoring it for a while, and it's been there staring us in the face. Yeah. That's the only thing. And I'm telling you, I really want this to be true. Like, we will all celebrate if there is
but then you can think it in a different way. If these anomalies are true and we don't see any prediction for the, we don't see any deviation in the EVMs, then this is telling us that the UCAVAs are real. And then we should look for theories that have this mechanism.
Yeah, right? But that's why I'm asking you, like, do you guys have any idea what type of symmetry, because it's already, I can see it, what type of symmetry you would need to make these phases real and make the CP violation small?
Maybe something like a spontaneous CP or some, like, this theory doesn't have it. So in this theory, it's more like you have the freedom and we can adopt the phenomenological perspective of I have these entries in the UCAVA and experiment is fixing what is the shape of the UCAVA.
Yeah, I don't know if spontaneous CP can help in this case. I don't see it.
If you promote.
Yeah, I don't think it helps.
I don't think it helps in this case.
Yeah, in this particular, it's just because everything is mixed, so
yeah, everything is mixed. Yeah, so
but if this theory comes from a larger from a more unified theory, for instance, where you only have where the number of UCAVAs are reduced.
Yeah, but then you don't have the freedom. So if everything, you're probably assuming that there is a lot more coupling to the third generation in this. There is, let's say, textures in these UCAVAs.
There will be textures. That's why.
So there these are not, which are not aligned with the standard model UCAVAs. So I don't see. And going back to the lepton flavor violation again.
Lepton flavor violation, we are taking it into account because the real part also contributes to lepton flavor violation. Yeah. So that's something, if we want the UCAVAs to give, then you unavoidably will have some prediction.
Is it a constraint though? So for example, mu2 and 3 gamma. So how severe is it?
And mu2 gamma a lot. It's super severe. So we need some of the the lepton flavor violation we do, but since we assumed only having the real parts, we didn't care about the imaginary parts because the EVMs will constrain them.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know how, and I agree with you that we should also take into account the possibility of having same order imaginary phases, but we assume them to be real. But I agree with you that this is something that we should be also looking at.
Yeah, but so for the leptons you show later, the leptons.
Okay,
we'll come back to that.
So basically just taking forgetting about the other observables, not focusing only on these transitions, if we want to address them, you need the if you want to ask the theory, what is the parameter space that gives me the RK measurement at the 1 sigma level and also be assuming mu at the 1 sigma level, you see this overlap here. This at the moment makes the prediction that the BS to E plus and minus is enhanced with respect to a standard model, but unfortunately this is still far from the experimental range. But the other predictions we can make is once we know this parameter space, we can ask the theory, what is the prediction for RK star in the different Q square modes that have been measured at the experiment? So if we go to the highest mode, which goes from 1.1 to 6 GV squared, you can see that it perfectly matches the observed experimental value. In the standard model, this is close to 1 at the 1 sigma level. So it's fine, and the prediction for the lowest scale Q squared transfer momenta, you see that the experiment prefers slightly lower values for RK, but this is still consistent with experimental measurement. So these predictions are fine. Now let's see which kind of texture we have to assume in order to be consistent with any other kind of flavor constraint. Well, that's the plane of the Wilson coefficients. We would be here. The Wilson coefficients are large. In the standard model are something like 4 or 5, but this is telling us that the mass of the leptoquark has to be something between 5, 6 dBs if we assume order one Yukawas. So let's go to the Yukawa matrix. These are the different Yukawas that connect different quarks and leptons. We need this corner here to be different from zero if are participating in the muons and in the electrons. But we know that, for instance, this product of Yukawas will lead to K long to mu E, and we have not observed that. We know that the taus will decay to light meson or to eta, and we know that these products will also contribute to this kind of processes. So we experiment is telling us the shape of the texture we need to assume in order to be consistent with the other experimental constraints. And particularly is telling us that these Yukawas must have the texture. Now we have mu 3 gamma as well, and I didn't put it in the slide, but I can tell you now what happens. Mu 3 gamma, I will need a formula to come later for the G minus 2, but basically in this case is chiral suppressed because only the leptoquark only talks to the left-handed charges. So if you want to flip the chirality, you pay the price of the mass of muon. But still, the chiral suppression is not enough to be consistent with a strong, very strong branching ratio of the mu 3 gamma process measured. So the thing is, in this case, because of the charge of the leptoquark, and I will show you later in the formulas, because the charge is minus 2/3, and the charge of the boton that is in the loop is 1/3, there's a fantastic cancellation in the phase space that because of the loop functions, the limit is 1/3 and 1/6. So there's a perfect cancellation that is allowing these processes to be fine with mu 2 gamma, only happening for this leptoquark charge under 2/3, that allows to have some order one Yukawas that address the anomalies and be consistent with mu 2 gamma. And this won't happen, for instance, if the leptoquark is this 5/3 1/3 or the other component of 5/4 that I'm going to be mentioning. So I'll be coming back to this and say it in more detail.
No, but can I stop for a second? Can I ask you something? So in addition to all these leptoquarks, you have all this other stuff that you need to integrate out. You have probably a C prime, and then you have the sixes, and they all violate flavor, right?
So no, we have the vector leptoquark in Pamisalan and the C prime.
You don't have
a in the second Higgs.
Second Higgs, you don't have a W prime, right?
No.
Okay. So what happens with everything else that you integrate out? The Yukawas those things also violate flavor. For instance, the second Higgs will come with its Yukawas. I don't know if they're the same. They are probably not the same.
If the mass of the second Higgs is around the scale where it's something like 10 TVs, then or 1 TV, it's fine. I mean, it won't be relevant. 1 TV maybe is too borderline, but if it's heavier, if all the other fields are around the scale where the theory is broken, we don't need them. So the theory, if we want to match it with experiment, we need that these leptoquarks have TV scale mass.
Yeah. But
otherwise, since the other vectors, we didn't see anything at experiment that is hinting for this. They could be something like 5 dBs, 7 dBs, and still are far from the experimental range. So,
parametrically, what's the mass of the C prime, for instance, with respect to the mass of the leptoquarks? Are they are controlled by the same PEP, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. The mass of the C prime is going to be similar to the
Sorry, your connection died there for a second.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I can hear you, yeah.
So the mass of the scalar leptoquarks come from the parameters in the potential. So when you take your scalar potential, right, these guys will get a BEF, the chi's, and the Yukawa times the BEF will give the mass of the leptoquark. So the Yukawas, mm-hmm. we don't know what they are. It could be order one, it could be 0.1, it could be 0.01. But okay. The vector leptoquarks, we know for sure that they have to live at the leptoquark unification scale because the mass comes from the covariant derivative of the Higgses. And we know that is the gauge coupling times the BEF. So there's no separation in there up to the mixing matrices once you go to the physical basis of the... So there's for the mass of the leptoquark is gauge coupling times the BEF.
Times BEF, right.
So in that sense, you the C prime and the
C prime is the same. It's gauge coupling times BEF.
Exactly. So you expect it to be
fair. Yeah, the C' is at the same scale.
Of the vector leptoquark.
Of the vector leptoquark. And the scalar leptoquark, you can say that they are a bit lighter because they have some chirality suppression. So that's the parametrically how the scales work.
So not chiral suppression, but Yukawa suppression. They come
it's a chiral suppression.
Well, it's not a chiral, it's a Yukawa coming from the scalar potential.
Yeah, but it's chirality flipping, so it's a chiral suppression.
Yeah.
Okay. So parametrically, these things are the things that you expect them to be lighter. They could be lighter.
Yeah, but they could also be heavy. But the experiment is telling us that there's some TV scale physics that they can address, so we expect them to be.
And you're right.
Fix it with experiment. It's just the phenomenological perspective. The theory doesn't predict the scales. Gives you the
yeah.
So you kind of fix it. It's the same as the experiment are telling us the shape of these textures of the Yukawas.
And the second Higgs, it's also same Yukawas times web or other Yukawas times web?
Other Yukawas.
I see. Okay, so that's a game you're playing. You're playing with these Yukawas. Okay, great. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so for 5-4 is kind of the same. We have two components. Again, if this 5-4/3 was the component addressing the anomalies, we would have problems with mu 2 e gamma. But since it's the same, a leptoquark that is charged under 2/3, we are fine because this cancellation happens. So we can address these anomalies with the Yukawas of the 5-4/2/3. So again, if we zoom out, that's the effective operator we obtain, where the two Yukawas are multiplied and the mass of the 5-4 is in the denominator. The same Wilson coefficient is predicted in this case for operator 9 and operator 10, which are the vector and the both vector, but with the here vector and axial in the lepton. So that's the way people parameterize this EFT. And then we can write everything as a function of these Wilson coefficients. So if we ask in the plane of the Wilson coefficients where RK and B2S mu are satisfied simultaneously, we find four possibilities. So let me pick the one that requires a lower Wilson coefficients just to show you how it works. And then we have, again, the same band where BS to mu mu at the 1 sigma level experimentally measurement and RK can be addressed simultaneously. And the predictions for RK star in this case are fine for the high Q squared mode, but for the low Q squared mode are a bit enhanced with respect to experimental measurement. So if this is really the leptoquark behind the anomalies, we would expect, if this is the realization of the theory in nature, that the following experimental measurements on RK star in this low Q squared mode go a bit up. So that's still is fine at this 2 sigma level with the standard model, with the experimental measurement. So in this case, we have the Yukawa, and we also have some Yukawas that induce these flavor processes that are highly constrained. So again, we should go to these kind of textures. And we also have the fact that this guy is chirality suppressed because the mu 2 e gamma is chirality suppressed because it only talks to the right-handed lepton. So we pay the price of the mass of the muon. And also there's a phase space suppression because of the charge of the leptoquark. So mu 2 e gamma, tau 2-3 e's, all these lepton flavor violation processes are fine if this texture is assumed. So also the theorem can make some predictions because the same Yukawa comes here and also is coming here up to the correction of the rotation matrices once you go to the physical basis. So in this case, the rotation matrices is nothing else but the BCKM matrix times some diagonal complex faces. So again, here with I agree with Asmina, we will have some EDMs. But just looking at the real part, that is what we were looking at in this project, and we should also look at the complex part as well. The identity, more or less, you expect the same kind of texture for these interactions. So in that case, you would expect, for instance, the top going to C mu plus mu minus or this kind of processes. So what about G minus?
Before you go on to G minus two, so there's so many probably low energy flavor processes that happen. Do you contaminate the measurements of the CKM, for instance? For instance, because in order like for you to see if this thing is the right the right explanation, you will take your operator. In your operator, you will plug in values for the CKM that you took from data, right? But yeah. Does your theory contaminate those values?
So the BCKM matrix in this case comes from the rotation matrices of the up and the downs, but yeah. All the other rotation matrices we don't know. That's something we should kind of constrain from them, from the difference, because they have to correct the charge fermion masses. So this is something that is free, but not that free, because eventually you have to recover the right fermion masses. But the BCKM is so we know for sure that the product of the U rotation matrix and the D left-handed will give the BCKM, and this is what is fixed.
No, let me ask you this in a different way. So for instance, do you have some electronic K decays in this theory? So for instance, do you generate K to pi and leptons?
You don't, because you are the texture you are assuming have this. So they could be, for instance, two orders of magnitude suppressed compared to the other ones. If you generate this prediction, it's going to be highly constrained. So that's why we need to assume these textures. And there's freedom to assume these textures. But you have to assume that the entries involving the apps or the light modes are suppressed, because otherwise would be ruled out by this kind of...
That's why you make those small. Yeah. Okay, it's a very special texture. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, but indeed, like K-long, for instance, is one of the, and the semi-leptonic decays K to pi will also be entering in this.
Clara, can I ask you one more question? So these textures, can they be imposed by symmetry?
No, they are imposed by phenomenological needs.
Way to find some weird symmetry that enforces this type of textures?
Would be very great. And the only thing I kind of expect that the third and the second generation, the third generation, for instance, have larger entries, because this Yukawa 4, the unphysical one, before you multiply by the rotation matrices, imagine that the rotation matrices are basically the identity. So this would be the Yukawa 4 that is correcting the mass of the charged leptons and the down-type quarks. So you kind of expect that the third generation, for instance, have a larger correction than the second one.
Can I ask you something that I don't understand? How many free parameters do you have? Because given all the flavor symmetries, how many free parameters does the theory have? Yukawa couplings and phases?
These Yukawas and the phases are free. So there is enough freedom, and doesn't make sense to try to constrain them, because there are 18 degrees of freedom here. And this D, so we know, for instance, that the UD product of these matrices is the BCKM, but the other ones we don't know. So they are two unitary matrices multiplying a random matrix. So it doesn't even have to be unitary, the product. That's why, in principle, there is freedom to. So what we checked is with these textures, we can correct.
I'm asking, how many free parameters does the theory have? Because you're clearly dealing, if you don't have any symmetries, I'm just saying maybe it's nice to have a reduced number of parameters, because
it would.
If you are allowed to move in parameter space, why is there this texture that you're picking? So that's why I'm saying having a symmetry may help explain the specific textures. And give better justification. That's why I'm asking, how many free parameters do you have and how many phases?
So many, like all these Yukawas are independent and have free parameters. The only constraint is that you need to correct.
Even if they are related by the 4-to-1, like because this is the low energy where the 4-to-1 is broken, right? So even if you have imposed 4-to-1, there's still how many are there? Like, is it in the hundreds? I'm talking over the magnitude. Is it in the tens? Is it 100? Is it 200?
So you have four yukawas, yeah. 3 times 3, that are not all of them are free, because once you rotate, you will have yagonals. Yeah. But there's too much freedom, unfortunately or fortunately. Like, this is something also in the standard model. You have freedom, right? And you fix the entry of the yukawas by experiment, because we know the masses.
No, of course. But for example, in the yukawa, we cannot have all 3 CP violet. There is only 1 CP violet in the symmetry, right? So I'm just saying.
In the standard model, it's qualitatively different, because the textures you can impose very easily with just horizontal symmetries. So is it the case here that you can do the same? Like that one can check just by back of the enveloping, just putting epsilons or epsilon squared, and check if this texture can be realized by horizontal symmetries.
We haven't checked that, but this could be a nice exercise. You mean for the light, for the first firm family, for instance, not having.
Yeah, I mean, right. So in this yukawa, you have a 3x3 matrix, and you are putting like numbers in the blobs there, which are large-ish, right? Or that they are the sizable numbers, right? But the other ones need to be small, because otherwise you have constraints, right? So one sanity check will be to see, look, okay, this is a texture. Can I just impose it by horizontal symmetries? I just give my families different transformation properties. So all first generations, they come with a power of epsilon. So say the upper left corner in the end will be epsilon squared, and so on, right? So that's what you do for the standard model. It works very well. Mm-hmm. And that's why the top, like, it's easy to explain that the top is heavy, because those guys, they are not suppressed, and then the other guys have epsilons around them.
It works. Not even for the standard model, we have a solution for the flavor puzzle. We have some hints, no? We understand it could be understood as origin.
But it's kind of easy. It's true that we don't know what's the UV completion to make it, but it's kind of easy to cook up a model where the first generation things are suppressed and the third are not. Maybe here it's not the case, because you have like a very specific texture on that lower left corner, and maybe not even with horizontal symmetries you can do it.
Yeah.
So let me give you an example. For instance, if you wanted to couple new physics to first generation stuff, no way you can do that with horizontal symmetries. It just doesn't work, because you know that the first generation stuff needs to be suppressed by epsilon to some power, right?
But something nice from the structure of the anomalies is that, for instance, in the B2S anomalies, right, we see that the muons, we have electrons and muons, and the deviations in the muons are a bit larger, or could fit if they are larger. Then for the charged anomalies, we see deviations in the taus, while we don't see in the muons in the electrons. So maybe there's also this structure of families is also being reproduced in these deviations. And maybe I don't know in this case if we could reproduce this, particularly this texture, while this entry is not constrained. This could be large as well, but this one cannot be large, because otherwise it would spoil the electron flavor universe violation.
Right.
So, yeah, this could be. So it's hard, because this is not really giving you the Fermi, the masses. You have these rotation matrices, right? That in principle are unitary, but you don't know anything about them. So there's too much freedom. So we could try to find some symmetries behind, but we adopted the phenomenological perspective of saying we have these entries. Let's see what experiment is telling us about the shape of these matrices. But so we show that it's possible, but I agree with you that there's no justification from the theory to expect this kind of textures a priori, unless some other UV completion is assumed where you have this kind of symmetries. But it would be great to have some justification. I agree with you, because then the predictions here, the only predictions you can make is that once you know the yukawa, you know that some entries are non-zero, so you can make the predictions for the other kind of observables that are involved, but you cannot make other predictions that you would if you had some symmetry behind or explaining the hierarchies. Yeah. Okay, so, well, just finishing about the possibility to address the G minus two. As I was telling you before, you need some chirality flip in this kind of observable. So either you pay the price of the mass of the muon, and in that case alone, you cannot address this deviation. So this also depends if you believe on the deviation, because this is an example of something that we don't have very well under control, the standard model prediction, right? Tension is more not only the experimental measurement and the standard model prediction, but inside the standard model prediction, we have the lattice collaboration, one of the lattice collaboration, right, that points that their prediction is compatible with experimental measurement. And now there are rumors that the other lattice collaborations are also approaching to this BMW collaboration. We have to wait. And then the data-driven results, which set this four sigma deviation with respect to the experimental measurement. So it's more about attention about what is the standard model prediction of the G minus two. But if this prediction, once there's more consent in between the theory point of view and large collaborations agree, and also the data-driven communities that compute these kind of predictions, they agree, and there's some deviation, this theory could address the deviation. So this is more if you believe that there is four sigma or three sigma, or it's fine. Just I'm going to tell you that this theory could address it. So if you believe this four sigma deviation, you cannot do it with any kind of perturbative Yukawa if you pay the price of the mass of the muon, because it's too suppressed. So you could have the mediator flipping the chirality in the loop. For instance, a scalar leptochord that talks simultaneously with a right-handed and the left-handed charged leptons. And in that case, you have a chiral enhancement and between this MQ and the mass of the muon. So MQ is the mass of the top, for instance, or the bottom. And this would give you the right enhancement for having perturbative Yukawas and addressing this deviation. So in this particular theory, if we try to explain it with phi 3, we cannot, because phi 3 only talks to the left-handed charged leptons, and that's why it suffers from the chirality suppression. Phi 4, if we only take into account this Yukawa, has the same problem because it only talks to the right-handed charged leptons. But the more general, this is the Yukawa we have, where we have the two kind of Yukawa 2 and Yukawa 4. I didn't pay attention to the Yukawa 2 because the theory doesn't really tell you that it has to be different from zero because you correct the neutrino masses in a different way. But in principle, it's there, and the entries could be one. There's too much freedom. There's the whole 9 3 times 3 entries there. So there will be constant labor, but in principle, they are there and they could be different from zero. So this, in this case, the 5-4 is one of the few scalar leptochords that interact simultaneously with right-handed and left-handed charged leptons. So it can induce the chirality flip and you have the chiral enhancement. So that's the particular SU2 components of the scalar leptochords, 5-3 and 5-4. You can, with this coupling and this coupling and the entry corresponding entry muon and 5-4, 5-4-3, you can address the G minus two, and particularly assuming scaling between the different Yukawas, you can take one of them to be the other one over 5 or over 3 or the same. You can address the deviation with a reasonable mass for the leptoquark and also for a reasonable coupling, and this could be addressed. But if you want to explain simultaneously the flavor anomalies in the G minus 2, then you cannot do it with 5-4 alone. You are forced to assume this kind of textures, because if 5-4, as before, had this corner here that I told you that we need, these contributions here contribute to the electrons, no? Talk between the muons and the electrons. And in that case, you would have your, since the Yukawa is the same for this interaction, you would have a mu2e gamma contribution coming from 5-4 for this component of 5-4, which is mediated by the top in the loop. And then if these entries were there, this would totally rule out the possibility of having 5-4 explaining the anomalies. But you can do it with 5-3, because it can be also there. And if your Yukawas have these textures, you can address simultaneously the flavor anomalies in the G minus 2 in consistency with other flavor constraints. So in that case, that's the where the connection where the Yukawa is connecting both observables. So the experiment, if you want to address everything with this theory, is telling you that Yukawas have this shape. And again, that's phenomenology fixing these Yukawas. I didn't talk about the imaginary faces, so the faces are there, and I didn't talk about how they are constrained, but probably they are severely constrained by the EDMs. And unfortunately, there's no other prediction, so there's the theory doesn't give you a reason for this texture to be there, gives you the freedom and can be there. And with these textures, we check that you can correct the fermion masses with the BEF of the second Higgs. So it could be consistent, but there's no answer to the fundamental question of why these textures are the way they are. But it gives you these candidates, basically, that can live at the TV scale and be consistent with other constraints like baryon number violation or lepton favor violation. So indeed, it's important to apply EFTs to understand what is the shape of the new physics behind, but it's also very important to find about the UV completions in order to make correlations, in order to make predictions and be able to test or rule out the theories. But I agree with you that would be nice to also to have another explanation in the UV of this theory that addresses this kind of freedom that we had to fix phenomenologically speaking. So thank you very much, and sorry for going over time. I guess I went, yeah, sorry. But this is inside this.
Not your fault. It's our fault.
No, but thank you. I mean, that's something we should check the complex parts, because they are there. In principle, they are there.
Yeah. And now let me ask you a very positive question. Let's say the anomalies are true. In the physics you describe, what is the first thing that you will discover? So let's say that the thing stayed, but beyond the R sub D, R sub K anomalies, what is the first thing that the collider would discover? Let's start with high lumi. So would high lumi see something?
Okay, so we have these leptoquarks can be produced with gluon fusion because they carry color.
Mm-hmm.
So you could hope to, if they are TV scale, now the bounds are 1 TV. You cannot, I don't think we will see 10 TVs or 5 TVs, but if they are in the region between 1 and 3 TVs, we can hope to see that likely. Also the...
or 3 TV, but this is what...
So now the bounds are 1 TV, right? With the sensitivity we have right now. So we can hope maybe with a high lumi, we reach 2 or 3 TVs. For this mass of the leptoquarks. But I don't think we will go above 5 dBs.
They are not resonantly produced, right?
So they could be produced with gluon fusion, for instance. No? And they...
But that's not...
No, but you need two, right? Probably.
Because you need first. Right,
but
so I will...
They have lepton numbers.
Right, so I will go for the C prime that can be resonantly produced.
Yeah. Yeah, what? The C prime could, but the C prime doesn't tell you that is this theory, right? Could be.
No, but you have a specific, that's the thing. So you have a UV completion in mind here beyond the R sub K, you're trying to embed it in the Patti Salam. So mm-hmm. what is the first thing that's most likely to be seen beyond the things that, let's assume that the anomalies are there, they stay there, they're measured to 5, 6, 6, I don't know how high they go. What is the first particle that you expect to be discovered from this?
So before expecting to see directly a particle, I would expect to see indirect signatures. Like for instance, with the shape of the Yukawas, I was telling you, just mm-hmm. looking at the other component, we have some predictions. For instance, BS to missing energy, BS going to missing energy, or B to K star, KK star plus missing energy in neutrinos. Mm-hmm. This cannot be below some, this is bounded from below because you need the Yukawas in order to explain B2K or B2K star. So if the anomalies are true and this theory is really below behind them, you have some lower bound for these processes. So if you improve the Bell 2, for instance, makes a measurement for that, towards the bound is it gets stronger and reaches the lower bound we have for this theory, then it's ruled out. So you can Or you can expect to see something or rule out indirectly, but looking directly to a particle
mm-hmm.
that really tells you that is this theory, the nicest thing would be the vector leptochord, but the vector leptochord unfortunately will be heavy. Like we won't see it directly because it's gonna be 10 TVs or more. So are the scalar leptocores that are the lightest ones and are a signature of this theory. And the C prime, it talks with every fermion. So I don't think we can really distinguish it from another C prime. Like you want, well, V minus L, or you want V, or you want L, you have some charges that are fixed. But I would say that the scalar leptoquarks directly are the ones that we probably notice first, if because they have to be, we know that they have to be light. Now with the C prime is the same. We expect it to be at the matter unification scale, so it could be heavy. It will be heavier than them.